Вариант 24.
Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит два раза. После первого и второго прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела «Аудирование» перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер один. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего «AF» и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только один раз. В задании есть одно лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись дважды. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием.
Now we are ready to start. Speaker A.
I enjoy watching sports, but to an extent, there are a million things I'd rather do than sit down and watch a football game. But I still like going to basketball and soccer games on occasion and watching a rare game on TV. My favorite sport is tennis, however. I follow it on TV and I play it mostly when I'm on holiday in Spain, as the facilities are great in the hotel and it's free. My favorite tennis players are Andy Murray, Rafael Nadal, and also that 16-year-old, Laura Robson, because she is my age and very fit.
Speaker B.
I honestly don't know where I'd be without sport. I used to play football for a team. Not anymore, though. Now I'm a massive football fan. I've been a Celtic season ticket holder since I was 11, and I go to every game I can. My favorite Celtic player is Henrik Larsson. The guy is a legend. He scored lots of goals at every level and was a fantastic all-round player. He's not Scottish, but he developed a love and passion for the club, and the fact that he stayed for 7 years shows his loyalty. I'd love to see him back at Celtic one day as a coach.
Speaker C.
My favourite sport is alpine skiing, and it's more of doing sport than watching it on TV. I have been skiing since childhood, and I'm rather good at it now. You can't beat rushing down a hill at 60 miles per hour with spectacular scenery around. My favorite skiing resorts are in the French Alps, where ski runs are always well prepared and chairlifts are never crowded. The only thing I try to regularly follow on TV is the World Cup events. I'm always excited by the courage of skiers because this sport is really dangerous and sportsmen are often injured.
Speaker D.
I joined a taekwondo club at the age of 6 and stayed there until I was 14. After the death of my sister, I had to quit as my mind was on the wrong track, so I stopped enjoying it. I was very good at competitions though, and I finished 3rd in my weight division in the British Open. I got to the second Dan black belt and I travelled to South Korea for 4 days. There I was graded by the leader of the World Taekwondo Federation, who was 85 years old, but he could still beat me in a fight if he wanted to.
Speaker E.
The person I respect most of all in sport is Yelena Isinbayeva in the pole vault. She is really incredible. She's broken the world record around 30 times or something like that, and she's unbeaten since 2004. She is many miles ahead of her nearest competitor. Even though she has broken the world record quite a lot of times, she always seems to be over the moon every time she achieves a new world record, as if every record she breaks is her first one. And that shows incredible passion and desire for what she does.
Speaker F.
I personally don't get why people watch sports. As for me, I would rather play them. And I do. I play soccer. But I hate to watch soccer on TV, probably because it's like watching the grass grow. 90 minutes of kicking the ball back and forth with only 6 shots at the goal and an outcome of 0-0 is the quintessential definition of boredom. I also think many people dislike watching soccer because it seems unfair. There are foul plays, redos, and much more that people disagree with. Actually, the same can be said about other sports too.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the texts again. Speaker A.
I enjoy watching sports, but to an extent. There are a million things I'd rather do than sit down and watch a football game, but I still like going to basketball and soccer games on occasion and watching a rare game on TV. My favorite sport is tennis, however. I follow it on TV, and I play it mostly when I'm on holiday in Spain, as the facilities are great in the hotel, and it's free. My favorite tennis players are Andy Murray, Rafael Nadal, and also that 16-year-old, Laura Robson, because she is my age and very fit.
Speaker B.
I honestly don't know where I'd be without sport. I used to play football for a team. Not anymore, though. Now I'm a massive football fan. I've been a Celtic season ticket holder since I was 11, and I go to every game I can. My favourite Celtic player is Henrik Larsson. The guy is a legend. He scored lots of goals at every level and was a fantastic all-round player. He's not Scottish, but he developed a love and passion for the club, and the fact that he stayed for 7 years shows his loyalty. I'd love to see him back at Celtic one day as a coach.
Speaker C.
My favourite sport is alpine skiing, and it's more of doing sport than watching it on TV. I have been skiing since childhood, and I'm rather good at it now. You can't beat rushing down a hill at 60 miles per hour with spectacular scenery around. My favorite skiing resorts are in the French Alps, where ski runs are always well prepared and chairlifts are never crowded. The only thing I try to regularly follow on TV is the World Cup events. I'm always excited by the courage of skiers because this sport is really dangerous and sportsmen are often injured.
Speaker D.
I joined a taekwondo club at the age of 6 and stayed there until I was 14. After the death of my sister, I had to quit as my mind was on the wrong track, so I stopped enjoying it. I was very good at competitions though, and I finished 3rd in my weight division in the British Open. I got to the 2nd Dan black belt and I travelled to South Korea for 4 days. There I was graded by the leader of the World Taekwondo Federation, who was 85 years old, but he could still beat me in a fight if he wanted to.
Speaker E.
The person I respect most of all in sport is Yelena Isinbayeva in the pole vault. She is really incredible. She's broken the world record around 30 times or something like that, and she's unbeaten since 2004. She is many miles ahead of her nearest competitor. Even though she has broken the world record quite a lot of times, she always seems to be over the moon every time she achieves a new world record, as if every record she breaks is her first one. And that shows incredible passion and desire for what she does.
Speaker F.
I personally don't get why people watch sports. As for me, I would rather play them. And I do. I play soccer. But I hate to watch soccer on TV. Probably because it's like watching the grass grow. 90 minutes of kicking the ball back and forth with only 6 shots at the goal and an outcome of 0-0 is the quintessential definition of boredom. I also think many people dislike watching soccer because it seems unfair. There are foul plays, redos, and much more that people disagree with. Actually, the same can be said about other sports too.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 2. Вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений A-G соответствуют содержанию текста. 1. True. Какие не соответствуют? 2. False. и о чем в тексте не сказано, то есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3. Not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
Hello, Tom. You look very relaxed. Did you have a good holiday?
Well, I have been in the sun. Abroad, actually.
Really?
Yes, although, as you probably know, I spend most of my holidays in this country with my family. But I had a reason for changing that this year. Until last Christmas, I was the captain of a football team. And then I resigned, you know. I got fed up with it. Anyway, I thought the team might ask me to come back. So I decided it was best to be out of the country at the beginning of the football season.
Oh, I see. So where did you go?
I've been to Ibiza, the island in the Mediterranean.
Oh, really? I went there myself once.
Did you?
Yes, I didn't pay, mind you. I got it free.
How come?
It was about 10 years ago. I remember it was a travel company, and they were being criticized in the press for the way they organized their package tours to such places. And so they paid for the whole party of journalists, like me, to go to Ibiza. Actually, we had a really dull time there.
You didn't like it?
Oh, it's a lovely place. No, it wasn't that. It was because they insisted on entertaining us. You know, they won't leave us alone to enjoy it. For instance, one day they suddenly announced that we were going on a trip to a salt works. As it happens, I had already been to one, and once you've seen one, well, I mean, they're all alike. It was so boring.
But I can't imagine you liking a beach holiday, I have to say.
You're quite right. I set out with good intentions, you know, with magazines to read, towels to lie on, and I sit there. But you can't get comfortable. Whichever way you turn, you start to get burnt, so you put on that sticky stuff and then you get sand in everything.
Well, there's a slightly more civilized way, you know. I tend to sit at a poolside with a sun lounger and a chair. So there's no sand, and you can read if you want to. And if you start to get too hot, you can jump in the pool to cool off.
I know a lot of people who like that, and I wish I did. But it's funny. I find it difficult to sit by a swimming pool and do nothing. I think of all the streets I haven't walked, and the shops I haven't looked around, you know. I can't get comfortable just sitting in the sun. I've got to have someone to talk to or something to do.
But you could read for 3 or 4 hours, couldn't you? If you had a good novel.
Anywhere but on a beach.
Really? So what's your idea of a good holiday then?
The best holidays I've ever had were the ones I spent in Ireland. I've got such happy memories.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
Hello, Tom. You look very relaxed. Did you have a good holiday?
Well, I have been in the sun. Abroad, actually.
Really?
Yes, although, as you probably know, I spend most of my holidays in this country with my family. But I had a reason for changing that this year. Until last Christmas, I was the captain of a football team. And then I resigned, you know. I got fed up with it. Anyway, I thought the team might ask me to come back. So I decided it was best to be out of the country at the beginning of the football season.
Oh, I see. So where did you go?
I've been to Ibiza, the island in the Mediterranean.
Oh, really? I went there myself once.
Did you?
Yes, I didn't pay, mind you. I got it free.
How come?
It was about 10 years ago. I remember it was a travel company, and they were being criticized in the press for the way they organized their package tours to such places. And so they paid for the whole party of journalists, like me, to go to Ibiza. Actually, we had a really dull time there.
You didn't like it?
Oh, it's a lovely place. No, it wasn't that. It was because they insisted on entertaining us. You know, they won't leave us alone to enjoy it. For instance, one day they suddenly announced that we were going on a trip to a salt works. As it happens, I had already been to one, and once you've seen one, well, I mean, they're all alike. It was so boring.
But I can't imagine you liking a beach holiday, I have to say.
You're quite right. I set out with good intentions, you know, with magazines to read, towels to lie on, and I sit there. But you can't get comfortable. Whichever way you turn, you start to get burnt, so you put on that sticky stuff and then you get sand in everything.
Well, there's a slightly more civilized way, you know. I tend to sit at a poolside with a sun lounger and a chair, so there's no sand and you can read if you want to, and if you start to get too hot, you can jump in the pool to cool off.
I know a lot of people who like that, and I wish I did, but it's funny. I find it difficult to sit by a swimming pool and do nothing. I think of all the streets I haven't walked and the shops I haven't looked around, you know. I can't get comfortable just sitting in the sun. I've got to have someone to talk to or something to do.
But you could read for 3 or 4 hours, couldn't you? If you had a good novel.
Anywhere but on a beach.
Really? So what's your idea of a good holiday then?
The best holidays I've ever had were the ones I spent in Ireland. I've got such happy memories.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers.
Задание 3.9. Вы услышите рассказ инженера о том, как сделать дома устойчивыми к землетрясениям. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
I work for a non-profit organization which designs and helps to build earthquake-resistant housing in developing countries. We live in an uncertain world where natural calamities like earthquakes cause more havoc than they did before. However, I strongly believe that it's not earthquakes that kill people, but poorly built buildings. Inspecting the aftermath of earthquakes throughout the developing world, I've seen a lot of collapsed buildings that were made of unreinforced masonry. Most of the people that died during these earthquakes were killed because of such poorly constructed buildings. Fatalities from earthquakes are a man-made problem, so there has to be a man-made solution. I was halfway through graduate school studying to be an earthquake engineer when I first thought of this problem. Then the 11th of September happened, and I was motivated to do something good for the world. I went to Gujarat, India, and there I saw a horrible loss of life and destruction due to collapsed buildings in the aftermath of a massive earthquake. Prior to that, I'd worked as a brick mason, and I thought maybe there was something I could do to help. So, in 2004, I founded the organization Build Change, which designs earthquake-resistant houses and trains builders, homeowners, engineers, and government officials to build them. Our aim is to greatly reduce deaths, injuries, and economic loss from earthquakes in developing countries. Typically, after an earthquake, non-governmental organizations import building materials and build new homes without putting in place models that create long-term change. We are training local people using local materials and working with government agencies to establish safer and lasting building standards. After the 2007 earthquake in Sumatra, we worked with over 600 families. When we left the area, there was another earthquake in the same place, and none of the houses that we had helped to rebuild had any damage. We revisited the villages after about 6 months, and others were building houses using techniques that we had taught. There are some inexpensive techniques that can be used to make a building earthquake-proof. In Indonesia, for example, the brick walls of many houses are not very strong. It's hot there and the bricks are very porous, so if they are laid when they are dry, they absorb the moisture from the mortar and will not stick together. Just by soaking the bricks in water before building the wall, you can double its strength. In Western Sumatra, Indonesia, some homeowners have seen their brick houses collapse in 1, 2, or even 3 earthquakes, and so they are shifting back to timber-based homes that are more earthquake-resistant. These are actually cheaper and easier to build too. Where we have worked in China, builders are trying to use a method called confined masonry to construct stronger buildings. Masonry walls are confined by reinforced concrete beams and columns. This helps hold the bricks in place during an earthquake, but they were not doing it correctly, and in many cases there was no connection between the masonry walls and the columns. Simple changes to the sequence of construction, like building the walls before the columns, can make a big difference to the building's strength. We've just finished our first training program with government engineers in Haiti on retrofitting buildings. Until now, we have only worked on new construction projects, but retrofitting is something that can be implemented in a region before an earthquake occurs. The goal is not a code-compliant building by US standards, but a building that is not likely to collapse in another major earthquake. Using locally available materials, engineers can assist the homeowners to build better buildings that are culturally appropriate.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
I work for a non-profit organisation which designs and helps to build earthquake-resistant housing in developing countries. We live in an uncertain world where natural calamities like earthquakes cause more havoc than they did before. However, I strongly believe that it's not earthquakes that kill people, but poorly built buildings. Inspecting the aftermath of earthquakes throughout the developing world, I've seen a lot of collapsed buildings that were made of unreinforced masonry. Most of the people that died during these earthquakes were killed because of such poorly constructed buildings. Fatalities from earthquakes are a man-made problem, so there has to be a man-made solution. I was halfway through graduate school studying to be an earthquake engineer when I first thought of this problem. Then the 11th of September happened, and I was motivated to do something good for the world. I went to Gujarat, India, and there I saw a horrible loss of life and destruction due to collapsed buildings in the aftermath of a massive earthquake. Prior to that, I'd worked as a brick mason, and I thought maybe there was something I could do to help. So, in 2004, I founded the organization Build Change, which designs earthquake-resistant houses and trains builders, homeowners, engineers, and government officials to build them. Our aim is to greatly reduce deaths, injuries, and economic loss from earthquakes in developing countries. Typically, after an earthquake, non-governmental organizations import building materials and build new homes without putting in place models that create long-term change. We are training local people, using local materials, and working with government agencies to establish safer and lasting building standards. After the 2007 earthquake in Sumatra, we worked with over 600 families. When we left the area, there was another earthquake in the same place, and none of the houses that we had helped to rebuild had any damage. We revisited the villages after about 6 months, and others were building houses using techniques that we had taught. There are some inexpensive techniques that can be used to make a building earthquake-proof. In Indonesia, for example, the brick walls of many houses are not very strong. It's hot there and the bricks are very porous, so if they are laid when they are dry, they absorb the moisture from the mortar and will not stick together. Just by soaking the bricks in water before building the wall, you can double its strength. In Western Sumatra, Indonesia, some homeowners have seen their brick houses collapse in one, two, or even three earthquakes, and so they are shifting back to timber-based homes that are more earthquake-resistant. These are actually cheaper and easier to build too. Where we have worked in China, builders are trying to use a method called confined masonry to construct stronger buildings. Masonry walls are confined by reinforced concrete beams and columns. This helps hold the bricks in place during an earthquake, but they were not doing it correctly, and in many cases there was no connection between the masonry walls and the columns. Simple changes to the sequence of construction, like building the walls before the columns, can make a big difference to the building's strength. We've just finished our first training program with government engineers in Haiti on retrofitting buildings. Until now, we have only worked on new construction projects, but retrofitting is something that can be implemented in a region before an earthquake occurs. The goal is not a code-compliant building by US standards, but a building that is not likely to collapse in another major earthquake. Using locally available materials, engineers can assist the homeowners to build better buildings that are culturally appropriate.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.
Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.